Harper. So,
hello.
Today, this is MAGA Central.
That's right.
MAGA headquarters right here, boys.
Because we have two MAGA heads. Not I said two. One right there, one right there. Well, there's a third one here. Muhammad, the diversity unicorn, is also... He was on way before MAGA. He was QAnon.
You're officially outnumbered.
He was big into QAnon back in the day. He still is.
Still trusting the plan.
Well, Q's still operating behind the scenes. No one mentions him. You know whenever QAnon and Q goes dark kind of thing? You know, and that's when the real shit's happening. When you don't hear a lot from Q, you know that's when he's working overtime.
He'll start getting worried.
In Langley. In an office in the bowels of Langley. So this week, Trouble in Paradise, no?
Seems a bit so.
It's all gone.
Trouble in Kekistan.
Or is it all just... Trouble in Kekistan. Is it all just for the lols? Is it just... Are Trump and Musk just shitposting, basically? Is it just shitposts?
Musk, maybe. A little.
Yeah?
Doing a little shitposting. I think Trump... probably less.
Doesn't know what shitposting is.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't know. Yeah, I think he's legitimately upset, but he gets mad because people don't, you know, say, yes, you're the best, you have the best ideas.
Don't like.
Yeah.
What he likes.
Yeah, yeah, that's my big, beautiful bill. You should be my loving it like me.
Yeah.
You don't like it like me, so I don't like you no more.
Right, so we can start with the BBB. Yeah, what's the BBB all about? Big
beautiful.
Bag of bullshit. I mean, big, beautiful.
Well, I think, Bill. Early on, I thought Musk had rightful criticism, as did like Thomas Massey and Rand Paul. And they didn't like that there was a bunch of stuff in there that was, you know,
pork
and
beef.
You know, they're doing some favors to New York and California with the salt, which increases the amount of tax breaks for people, and specifically in those areas and not for the middle class. But, you know, that's just a little thing. And the AI, taking the AI regulations away from the states, that's not cool. You don't mess with states' rights in the U.S.
Right.
And I don't even know if Trump knew that was in there, because we know he doesn't read anything.
Right. Apparently nobody read that bill.
No. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene actually admitted that she voted for it without reading it.
Right.
Which is...
How can you even say that? I mean,
I know. Yeah.
I mean, obviously you can do it, but how do you just openly say that, or it's openly known? And that's not the first time. There's been many different bills over the years where, so I just don't get it. How can you vote for a series of laws, basically enacting a bunch of different laws without actually knowing what is in it? I mean, does that not like create problems down the line, in the sense of did I vote for that?
Yeah, I mean, no. I think it's more like it's Trump's bill. I'm a Republican.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to vote yes on this. And as long as I vote within party lines, it's a problem, not just with Democrats.
So people understood the general outlines of it. So I don't have to read every page type thing. They understood like that it was, I mean, the main thing that, the main argument for it is that it's basically tax cuts,
yeah,
across the board.
That'll increase the inflation, supposedly.
Right.
You know, you see the competing like arguments about that. That say, no, it's not going to. Oh, yes, it is, and it's just right. Most nobody people knows. Just
so
like,
break
shut
it
up.
Down a little bit. It's like you've got like the kind of like meat and potatoes of what the bill was extending Trump's original tax cuts from 2017 that were set to expire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's kind of like the main crux of it is making them, extending them so that way they don't go away. Because if you don't extend them, then it goes back, which means that the tax burden dramatically increases for everybody who had been benefiting from the tax cuts.
Right. So he wants to feed the base, keep the base happy, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's where the projected mass... As I understand it, that's where the main projected increase in
deficit
in the debt
and
comes from, because you're reducing tax revenue. There's going to be a projected continuation.
That goes back to the salt cap, which is state and local tax cap, and they want to actually it's increasing it from the 2017, which was at 10%. He wants to bring it up to 40%, and that actually hurts the middle class. And that's what like people like Rand Paul and Thomas Massey are talking about, how they need to just go back to what they were doing in 2017 with the tax cuts, keeping it at 10%.
Right, and why does it hurt the middle class if it's increased to 40%? Surely because you get an extra tax break.
The vast majority of people who will be affected by the increase in the in how much you can deduct from your state and local tax payments are not middle class people. And so essentially what this was, and the, actually the people in the Trump administration admitted it, was that this was a favor to New York and California Republican politicians to get them to vote for the bill.
Right.
For the one big, beautiful bill.
They had to put that in there to get it passed.
It's just a favor. Yeah. And so, like, you know, that's, I think when it comes back, we go back to Elon Musk, I think that's a legitimate complaint. And that's where, like, this all kind of started, was him saying, like, this stuff, we shouldn't be doing some of this stuff. And then, you know, how Trump, he doesn't like it when people say that.
Because they don't understand.
Yeah. And this same thing, kind of similar thing happened in the, a few earlier this year with Thomas Massey complaining about the continuing resolution bill. And he's like, we're going to primary Thomas Massey because he's not agreeing to what my continuing resolution. And so it's like Trump takes an ego hit. And when he does that, he lashes out seemingly.
So is it going to cause, Musk retweeted someone, or did he say it himself? Anyway, he agreed with the idea that it's going to cause a recession in the second half of this year.
That's what Elon Musk said, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, and he's a bit pissed as well because he went in there, supposedly saved all this money, allegedly, maybe did, maybe didn't, but saved a bunch of money for the government, for the country, through cutting all these programs, these USAID and et cetera, DOGE stuff. But then Trump just takes all those savings, dumps them back into other programs, and adds even more to it. So rather than, you know, it's kind of like somebody comes into my house, audits me, because I'm running a deficit, or I've got a lot of debt. I'm going to cut my spending. So they come in and say, look, well, you've got three cars. You don't need three, you only need one. So we're going to sell two of your cars. And you don't pay insurance and all that. So your outgoings now, after when we get rid of these two cars, are going to be a lot less. You're going to save money and your debt's going to be reduced. And I go, cool. So you've reduced my debt by that amount from taking away two cars. I only need one. Cool. When that audit or whatever turns it back, I go and buy four more cars. With using the money that I saved from selling the two cars, and I went into more debt to get two more cars, so now I've got four. And the auditors are like, what the fuck? So that's, it seems to me that's kind of what, at least from the point of view of DOGE and the supposed savings that Musk has been making in his 6 months there, all that was for nothing.
Right.
He wasted his time, basically. Because he expected Trump to follow on with trying to cut the debt, you know, by not proposing and getting past a big, beautiful bill that is super heavy and just increases the debt ceiling, right? Or force requires the debt ceiling to be increased. Like, he added to the defense, like the defense budget went up a couple of $100 billion or something from last year.
Yeah.
But then that's to kick out all the immigrants, right? If you want to secure a country, you need more money for it. Because a lot of it went for that. A lot of it went for immigration, border control, and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, people can't expect to get what Trump promised without a certain amount of spending. But they assumed that all this kind of wasteful spending that was going on under Biden and previous administrations under the Democrats, that if you cut a lot of that, you'd be able to fund border control and all these other different things that Trump promised and still reduce the debt. But apparently not. Because it costs a lot of money to run America.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought, I don't know about a lot of people, but like me personally and people who want forever wars to end, was that a lot of that money being used
across the world
would be brought back and be used for domestic purposes.
Well, maybe it is.
I'm not sure about that so far. Have they cut down Ukraine, sending money to Ukraine? And yeah, but maybe. Funding to Israel, not been touched.
Definitely not, no. So what about Musk's, was it a ketamine bender then? Pretty much. He dropped the bomb. Everybody.
Yeah, that
brace yourselves. Trump is on the Epstein list. Yeah. Everybody who was paying attention knew that Trump was on the Epstein list or was named there as having been someone who had contacts with Epstein. Everybody knew that. So what was Musk implying?
Yeah, I think
something that everybody already knew.
Well, the implication is obviously to try and like hit Trump's image.
Right.
And
he's actually supporting, I mean, he's, you know, he's basically doing what the Dems have been trying to do for the past 8 years, basically. You know, he's a racist. He's a horrible, very bad, orange man, bad person, right? Mm-hmm. It's weird that he would do that after 3 months ago saying he loved Trump as much as any heterosexual man could love another man.
After letting his kid run around with Trump all over the place. And it's so you're saying that what you are essentially accusing him of is being a pedophile. And
yeah, because otherwise it's nothing.
Otherwise it's a nothing burger. So if you're going to accuse him of a pedophile and at the same time you just spent the past like however many months like letting your kid just
there was no way he was going to come out of that looking good.
Yeah.
I mean, by saying that.
Right.
And he obviously didn't think about that because he was high on ketamine or something.
It's funny because like when I first read it, like immediately I was like, oh, that's a pretty good way to get the Democrats to force them to release the Epstein list.
Right.
You know, it's an understandable place for your mind to go, but I don't think that's what it was. I think, more likely like Musk kind of was messed up on ketamine and went into a bit of a manic phase and just it took over his brain and he said something he shouldn't have said, which he later deleted.
Right.
I think like, there was the tweet from the one lawyer who said, I can say unequivocally that Trump is not on the Epstein client list.
Right.
You know, so like what is Elon Musk doing here? He's really hurting himself.
Right.
Mainly.
Right.
And then, and just to like to drive that point home, this was the guy who was the lead of the lead of Epstein's defense.
Right,
right.
He was the lead lawyer on Epstein's defense in the weeks or so prior to his
alleged
suicide.
Right,
which we can now confirm because Kash Patel saw the videos that don't exist.
Right, that it was a suicide.
Anyways, like this is a guy who would know.
Yeah.
And he's saying like,
so basically
I asked him directly and Epstein said, no, there's nothing.
Right. So basically the answer, the conclusion is that Musk is not cut out for politics, obviously.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
He can't handle it.
No.
He doesn't. He's too much truthy. Just let it all hang out, take some ketamine and just say what you think.
He can't really play the game.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
He's used to as being like a huge CEO business guy to getting his way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
While it worked up to a certain point.
Right.
It was not that surprising to see them two kind of go at it at some point.
But then I saw, and maybe this is the kind of person he is. He doesn't take any of it. It's kind of like just it's just for laughs, really, there's a bunch of people who posted stuff relating to their spat and
his laughing.
He would just laugh emoji. Yeah. Bullseye. Yeah. That's it. Ha ha ha. Yeah. It's all just a bit of fun and games, but so that's the kind of person he is. He doesn't take anything seriously. He'll say, apparently rude or aggressive or inflammatory things to other people and then laugh about it afterwards and think we're all just going to have a beer and pretend it's fine. And maybe that's, if the other person is that way inclined, then sure, it'll work that way. But if they're not, but it doesn't do much for your reputation or your, your image. And it's possible, I suppose, that, one benefit to Musk at least was that it garnered a lot of attention for X, for Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's something he obviously is.
Yeah, he makes money that way.
So he's maybe stupid like a fox in that sense, where he puts how this kind of shit. Well, he just generates a shitstorm or a media or scandal on his platform and shitloads of people get on there, or either viewing it or posting about it, talking about it, and that translates to ad revenue.
To that point, to that point,
and money for him.
The past few days, he's been posting time and again, like X is the number one app in Japan. Right. X is the number one app in South Korea. X is the number one app in this, like, Saudi Arabia, country after country. And he did this for like 10 different countries. Mm. And these are major countries. So, like, to your point, there's something there to be said for that, because he obviously is benefiting a lot when.
It makes it all very cynical, though. You know, like, I've gotten that impression a lot over, you know, now and again. I realize it, you know, over the past, you know, quite a long time, actually, but periodically, you know, and we're looking at the news and looking at the state of the world, analyzing what's going on, all that kind of stuff, and a lot of it seems truly dire and serious and all that kind of stuff to us, right? Yeah. And other people are on social media are kind of, you know, they're agreeing with that or confirming that it's clear that other people feel the same way, mm-hmm. a lot of people on social media. But every now and again, I get something happens where I go, hang on a minute, these people that are doing these things that we're thinking are really serious, or mm-hmm. this could, you know, be really bad for society, really bad for the population, global population, really bad for the world, all that kind of stuff. They don't give a shit. They're actually doing it just for the lulz, you know. Mm. None of it's personal to them. We tend to take this kind of stuff personally. Ordinary people tend to take this kind of stuff that happens in the world personally, and they're personally invested in it. But then you look at the actual individual involved, and you see them kind of backslapping and laughing and having a beer afterwards, you know, and you're like, so why the fuck am I getting all worked up with this shit when these guys don't give a toss? This isn't real high stakes kind of serious, you know.
I can't believe that it's high stakes stuff when, like, you know, 2 weeks later you see, you know, for example, like Bush and Obama, like slapping hands and, you know, hanging out together like nothing was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Trump's one of those people, because I think, well, just in relation to the Trump Musk thing, like there's still reports coming out like today that he was
super sad.
He's super drugged up all the time.
Yeah.
So like Trump's supposedly talking about his drug use still. And so I don't think he's just kind of laughing it off like that. Although I, you know, you make a good point about there's a lot of people that live in a little bubble where like it's not all that important or anything to them.
Yeah, well, it's not even that they live in a bubble, but they're at that level. They're just like at the level of government and politics, international politics and stuff. It's all a kind of like, what do you call them? George Carlin says it's one big club and you're not in it. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. But I just, now and again, I give myself a wake up call and go, look, these people, I mean, it's hard to know. It is obviously the trajectory that the world's on doesn't seem to be good, and objectively it seems to be dangerous, but it makes me question like the whole Russia thing and stuff and you know, threat of nuclear war and all that kind of stuff. I kind of try to remind myself about obviously the media as well, trying to scare the shit out of people and all that kind of stuff, when that's not actually what's going on, that there's no intention, that even in the Russian government, then they know that there's no, even despite the way they talk about the West and all that kind of stuff and make veiled references to nukes and stuff, that they know there's not going to be any nuclear war, you know?
So a bit theatrical.
It's all a bit theatrical, yeah. And we, the little people, tend to take it too seriously, you know? But at the same time, things don't seem to be going well. What?
You get Alex Jones, though, who want to talk about it seriously. Yeah. We're on the threat of a nuclear war.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And these people don't give a shit about what's going on.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know, but then we haven't had a nuclear war, no matter how many times. You know, Al Gore was saying in the mid-90s that, you know, there would be no more ice in the on the polar caps, and snow would be a thing. Like, your children aren't going to know what snow is.
Mm-hmm. And you think that was all just, he knew he was, yeah.
That's the thing, I don't know.
Yeah.
But people hear that stuff at the meeting, they take it seriously, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so L.A., moving on to LA, because that's also something that is Trump's fault.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, that's accurate.
I've got a couple of videos here just to so we can see what kind of thing that's been, you know, going down. in LA. And what was it? 86? Was that the LA riots in 80? Was it 86 or 96? You know when that guy got.
But the early 90s is the early 90s? When they were on video, the cops were on video beating. The name escapes me right now. That was 91 or 92.
Okay, 91. Yeah. There's just one. I mean, obviously, this isn't all LA, but. Did you get it, Scotty? It's kind of Mad Maxi.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You boys like Mexico?
Nice.
That'll show them.
Show them. Let's burn a car. Here's another one. I think that's pretty much all we got in that one. I think I missed somebody else. State of eating here after. Okay. So it's just kind of like a standoff and stuff. There's lots of. You know, you can extrapolate from that, but here's a picture that might sum up what's going on.
They want to come to the U.S. and then they want to fly the Mexican flag here.
Yeah.
Why did you leave?
Because
you could have done that down there. Because
California should be part of Mexico.
Yeah, well, they can have it.
They can have it?
Yeah.
Give it back?
They can have it. I mean...
No.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
No, screw them. Send in the National Guard and send them back where they came from.
Yeah, is that what you think?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You see the pictures of the bricks just like they did 4 years ago?
Yeah, so there's a mix here of obviously people, mostly Mexicans or South Americans, who are in the country, undocumented, but working. Maybe. Jobs, some of them anyway. Working jobs that, or maybe just, you know, doing alternative jobs, like being a gang member, which is also a job. You don't pay a lot of taxes.
Get that Soros money.
Get Soros money. And ICE is coming in and trying to identify whoever, whatever list they've got. And they're taking them and abducting them off streets. And these people are out protesting because these are fathers and mothers who are workers who are being taken off the streets and, you know, they're contributing to the American economy. Who's gonna like pick your watermelons, Bo? Who's going to pick the watermelon that you're going to go home and munch on? There won't be any. You won't have any.
We'll just run out of watermelons.
Yeah, and you'll be fine with that.
I mean, as long as you know they're gone,
yeah.
Who's going to build the houses? Who's going to you know work your garden?
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Right. We can figure that out.
We'll figure it out.
You can.
Yeah, yeah.
But
then you did you see what even the mayor and you know Gavin Newsom?
Newsom.
That's what Trump called him.
Newsom.
In his True Social post for like. Basically preventing the ICE from doing anything about this stuff.
So, but Trump sent in the National Guard, basically.
Yeah. I don't know if they've
2,000.
You know, if you've seen them on the streets yet.
But, yeah.
That's what he's said. I'm sending the National Guard in to take care of this problem because Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom are useless, which is true.
These are troops. So first troops arrive in LA after Trump sends the National Guard to curb immigration protests. Trump's use of the National Guard is unusual, according to the BBC, according to Reuters. Trump's decision to federalize the National Guard, which is normally under state control, is unusual. The military forces website said it was brought under federal control using Title 10 of the U.S. Code, same law Trump used during the Civil Rights era.
It's the
same law that was used during the civil rights era. See what
Trump tried to do it on January 6th, and Pelosi did not allow it as well.
Yeah. Which is another interesting little tidbit about this is like you have the January 6th insurrection, which was people just like walking around in the Capitol building, and then there was an absolute shitstorm of investigations and arrests and whatever. And here, yet again, like in the Black Lives Matter movement stuff that happened during COVID and all that, they're just like, yeah, keep going. Just keep burning it down.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to do anything about it.
And yeah.
It's just total hypocrisy.
Yeah, so what's happening in California now, at least the level of violence amongst the population is way worse, obviously, than January 6th. Yeah. But it's different, right? Because on January 6th, it was, you know, those were white people, mostly.
Yeah.
Trying to storm. And also, they were trying to overthrow the government.
By walking.
Yes,
leisurely.
There's different ways to overthrow governments, you know, they're just using a different tactic, but technically it was an insurrection. I mean, officially it was an insurrection.
Officially, yeah.
And in California, it's very different. These are poor immigrants who come to America for some freedom. And they're being brutally treated and deported by fascist policemen under dictator Trump's rule. It's very different, isn't it? Puts a different slant on it there, Bo, doesn't
it? Well, no, I'll take this one thing to say is that get a lot of Venezuelan immigrants, and the reason is because we've been engaging in economic warfare against Venezuela for quite a long time, and a lot of these people come here because they can't survive in their own country. Mm. I think that a lot of people on the right don't talk about that.
Yeah, maybe. Although I think, it's very complicated, obviously.
Right.
I don't think put it all on America's foreign policy over the last few decades, whatever, it has had an effect, obviously. But I think the main reason you're seeing so many immigrants in the US and the resulting in situations like this over the last number of years is because government has actually, especially under Biden, has actually opened the borders and encouraged people to come in. They've done the same thing in Europe. Immigration into the country.
That's definitely a big part of it, because they come and they are given like prepaid credit cards and staying in fancy hotels flown over to different parts of the country to live in.
The basic economic idea is that you stimulate the economy. I mean, you have potential within the economy, but you need workers to actually exploit that potential.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to bring the people in first. And if you don't have enough people, and especially there's a lot of jobs that are kind of more menial jobs. Mm-hmm. And also if you bring immigrants in, you can pay them less.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of economic reasons from the point of view of a government to bring in other people. Now, that would be fine, except if you have a sticking point where you have some kind of ethno-nationalistic ideas about a country. Then that's the only reason why you would really push back against that. Because I think economically, at least on paper, it makes sense to everybody, except when you realize that the country isn't just a business. It's got a history, it's got a culture, it's got a tradition, it's got a people have a lot of people have lived in countries, have ancestors, have family connections and ties there and all that kind of stuff, and it's all based on, it's in most countries, it's based on race.
Yeah.
And culture. Race based on culture based on.
Right. I think most people
I'm thinking that's people who just use the economic policy think that's irrelevant. That's not important.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be overwritten or it can be changed or it can be modified and you can become a multicultural society and it'll be fine.
Right.
You won't be losing anything. You'll be gaining everything.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who go no. And a lot of people who say no to that know that instinctively. You know, that they eventually respond to that instinctively. There's lots of people, like in Ireland, for example, which has seen a lot of immigration in the past few years, and in other European countries. But there's a lot of people in these countries who, on paper, when they hear the idea of poor immigrants come, welcome to our country, you poor immigrants from blah, blah, blah. But then when they see the effects of it, like in a small town of maybe a few thousand people, suddenly almost 50% of it is people of a different skin color who don't know, a lot of them don't know the language and just don't know how to behave.
Yes.
And suddenly they're saying, I grew up in this town. I was born in this town. My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents all lived in this area. And suddenly they start to realize that there are other aspects to being Irish or French or whatever that were just innate, but that they didn't fully comprehend because they were always just there. But it's only whenever they become threatened with being taken away or removed that suddenly they go, hey, that's actually important to me. In fact, it's really important in terms of how I feel about, you know, every day in terms of living in this country. It's kind of something quite non-tangible, let's say, but not unimportant because it's non-tangible.
And they would say, and critics will say that it's a purely racist, ethno-nationalist thing. Racist. That's what they call it. But really, what you're talking about is it's not that. It's
identity.
It's identity. It's these people. Like, I want to live with people, you know, if I was in Ireland, I would want to live with other people who were Irish. And that's to say that they had a similar upbringing. They have a similar, like, sensibility.
Yeah. Sensibilities and outlook, worldview.
You know, celebrate the same holidays.
Same nuances. You can chat with them. You have, yeah. There's slang terms. There's aspects of linguistics and stuff that all give you a sense of, and it could even go as far as people's DNA in a certain sense. You know what I mean? If you want to go that far, that it's in some way in the genetics or their epigenetics from their parents, you know, that they carry something within them that is, it's systemic within them, you know. It's even the shape of some people, you know what I mean? Or the look, the size of their head, the big spud head on them, you know, big potato head, you know, or just and the turn of phrase and all that kind of stuff. And then suddenly you get people in who have no history of that whatsoever, and there's a lot of them in your town. Suddenly you feel like this doesn't feel like home anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's as important to people as the feeling of feeling like this is their home.
Yeah, the lack of assimilation into whatever culture or society that these people are immigrating to is I think generally the main issue. We see that in Canada with the Indian immigrants who set up like their own conclaves in different places, Ireland as well.
Yeah,
and in the U.S., it's all the people from Central and South America who come in and they're there for 10 years. They still don't know the language. You know, they're still not the, you know, illegal status.
Yeah. And it depends on the country and the size of the country and that kind of stuff. I mean, the UK has had a lot of history of immigrants, like over the, you know, past really since the Second World War, you know, Indians and Pakistanis because of the British Empire, right?
Yeah.
Those ties and those people have, there's been 50, maybe, well, you're talking about 70, 80 years, and they haven't assimilated. They haven't become, the idea that you can just become English is ridiculous. Those people kept themselves apart largely. They call themselves English and stuff. They have English accents and all that kind of stuff, but they keep their culture. Even the people who come want to keep their culture. Yeah. That's the thing that blows my mind, is the people that immigrate into other countries, into foreign countries, they themselves highlight the importance of identity and culture and cultural identity and racial identity, etc., because they keep themselves apart from the people that they're immigrating, from the people of the country that they're immigrating into. So that they make that clear, that that's quite important to everybody around the world by what they do. Mm-hmm. But when Irish people or French people or American, you know, white Americans, let's say the same thing, they get dismissed as racist. But the immigrants are acting like racists effectively when they move into countries because they tend to keep themselves, they tend to gravitate towards other people of their race, culture, skin color, however they identify it. It's gaslighting by the government to call people racist and all that kind of stuff. It's obviously true that that is an important thing. Culture, identity, race is very important for people and always has been throughout human history.
Yeah.
So to dismiss it as racism and condemn people for it is just it's trying to force something on people by using a slur to shut them down.
Yeah.
Because you know that they have a valid argument.
And it's like part of the social engineering of like chaos and division in a society to like actively kind of create this situation and not force these people to assimilate. Like, hey, you got to learn our language. You got to learn the norms. I mean, a lot of places, if I went to Russia and wanted to live there, you know, they would make me do these things.
Yeah.
you know, because
they understand,
the importance of it.
And it would take a generation. It would take you to go to another country and have kids.
Yeah.
And it'd be those kids who would then become, have a much better chance of really becoming, becoming Russian, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it takes a whole generation. Right. And that's assuming that those kids, you encourage those kids to fully assimilate into the country. Yeah. And don't keep yourself, don't find a bunch of other Americans in Russia. You know, create, you know, live in the same town together, stick up an American flag, eat hot dogs and Twinkies and, what else do you do?
Careful, I haven't eaten.
Fourth of July, celebrate the 4th of July and, issue all things Russian, you know, which happens quite often. It's crazy because, like, there's places in Ireland, even within countries, you know, where, you know, you think everybody in Ireland is Irish, but if I move to, like, say the other side of the country, which is not far, but let's say I move to the other side of the country, I could be there for like 30 years and I would still be seen as an outsider in another part of Ireland. I would never be fully accepted in that sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff goes back a long time, and it's so well known. It's just like duh. Yeah, everybody knows that. They know it in their bones, type thing, because they live it every day. But suddenly now it's like being questioned as or called racism or something stupid, when it's just something that is completely natural to human beings and has been forever. And it's not something you can just dig out and say like that's racism. You're just going to cause conflict, basically. You're gonna piss people off.
Yeah, we're reaching the points where racism has gotten to the levels of like labeling people Nazis and like Hitler. It's like that's just the slur you throw at people to end all the discussion about
it, right?
You know, so it's really sad.
So yeah, it's not gonna end well. So, and what's Trump up to when all this is going down? When he's had this spat with Musk, just water off a big orange duck's back, no?
I don't know. He's a little distracted now with the California stuff, I think.
No, he's not.
No?
Because this is where he is.
Well, yeah, you got pictures of where he is?
This is him right here. He's really worrying the whole thing. He's sitting in his office with one of those kind of worry stress balls. Yeah. No, here he is at the UFC last night.
Oh, he was at UFC.
Yeah. Dana White.
Oh, he's burning. He's taking his stress away by watching a little two men beating the heck out of each other.
He's just He's just
it's called therapy, bro.
I think it was the winner of the female fight. Actually went up to him after the fact, after she won, and like gave him her title belt and like hugged him and
said, "I'll come to LA and beat the crap out of those Mexicans."
Yeah.
Just there, mate. Yeah. Well, this is his base here. Absolutely.
And of course, again, two different perspectives. Some people look at that and say, the guy's fiddling while Rome burns, right?
Yeah.
Look at the crisis, look, you know, the Musk fallout, the scandal around that and kind of stuff. Doesn't look good for his government. People are leaving. LA, he's sent in the National Guard to like. So he should be. He doesn't give a shit, like, you know. He's fiddling while the room burns, right? But this person who posted it, who's Kofifian on, their comment is sends the national, and this is probably representative of a lot of MAGA people like you two, sends the National Guard to crush the rioters in a rebellious province populated by hostile foreigners and governed by traitors. Attends a UFC match that night, is adored by the crowds. He is the king of America. Yeah. So that's diametrically opposed.
Well, that's my burner account, just to let you know. For
it
now.
Is yeah, okay. Yeah. That's you.
You know, I think we really should switch to a monarchy system with Trump as the head.
And Ivanka, though, Ivanka likes a good punch up as well. Apparently.
Yeah.
With Mike, good old Mike Tyson.
They love Trump. Yeah.
We have had a tremendous night of preliminary action, and as Daniel Cormier always likes to tell you, the best is yet to come. But ratcheted up a notch with 47 in the building with us yet again.
It's crazy. It's crazy though that I mean, like you said, that's his base, so he's going to That's a PR tour, basically. Exactly. Right? It's not just him taking some time off. He's not lying on the beach like Biden, right? That's him working.
It's a political rally without him having to make a speech.
Right.
But it's also something that he did prior to him being president. This was like he was always into UFC, so it's not exactly outside of the norm for him to go to something like this. So it is both.
But at this time,
well, Rome is burning.
How insensitive. I mean, I think like you'd see criticism if it was a Democratic president doing something like that during a riot from people on the right, you know. So it's like they on both sides they play these games like, oh, he's not running the country, he's at a UFC fight, blah 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 blah. And it's like, dude, you know,
that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. Yeah,
yeah, they have a quite a naive version of. Well, that's the thing. Like I was saying. Like Trump's obviously different. He's quote unquote a man of the people. He's not a polished politician, hasn't been brought up in that milieu, doesn't know how it works, didn't understand in his first term and obviously in his second term, that the White House is the job of the president for a long time has been, probably since JFK, has been a ceremonial position.
Right.
You're just there as the front man, you're the PR guy, right? The people elect you as like, I like the look of him. Look at Obama. He's good at dancing. Yeah. I want him to be president so he can go off on tours and talk to people and then talk to us and tell us that everything's going to be fine to maintain that social contract and maintain the appearance of that social contract where, you know, the people give power to politicians to take care of the big, difficult stuff so we can get on with our normal lives, you know? Mm-hmm. So Trump... So the president and most presidents in most Western democracies anyway are just effectively ceremonial positions. They go around shaking hands, while the guys behind the scenes who have been running the country, the long-term senators, congressmen, and deep state or intel types, they're the ones who direct both domestic and foreign policy. And the government, the White House, the president just goes, gets a briefing and just reads it out and signs off on it.
Yeah.
So Trump comes in and decides that he's actually going to try and exercise the powers of the office of the president, which are significant.
Nobody's used to that.
No. And in his first term, they went after him and didn't want him to do that. They got very annoyed at him trying to do that and tried to impeach him three times and all that kind of stuff. But in his second term, it seems, after they tried to assassinate him, I got the impression immediately after that, getting a feel for the tempo of the discourse around Trump and all that kind of stuff after that, was that they basically decided, okay, he's going to win. Let's let him win.
Mm-hmm. He'll get us 4 years.
But let's take our hands off.
Yeah.
Let's let go of the reins here. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of like not play ball with him, basically. Not work against him like we did in his first term.
Right. Yeah.
But to just kind of like go, you go ahead. We'll just sit back and watch.
Get 4 years and then we'll redo everything.
Right. And what happens when the people who usually all the spin doctors and the backroom guys are keeping everything running smoothly, when they take their hands off the button or off the control panel, then things start... You see what it would be really like if democracy worked the way people think it works, which is some dude gets elected to be president. He picks whoever he wants to come into the administration. And then they go, we're going to run the country. And then there's like fucking, you know.
But at the same time, too, they're not
stuff going
they're
off not all over
just
the place.
Like, yeah, I don't believe that they're just going to like sit back, take the hands off and say like, you know, we'll just let you do what you're going to do. Like they would be intentionally doing things in order to make it turn out badly. And basically trying to like smear that image and that perception, that possibility.
But that using the Musk Trump spat, that was their own doing.
Well, yeah,
that was a result of him employing Musk or getting Musk to come in and be Dodge and pumping up Musk, and then you know picking a person like that who you know takes drugs basically, who's mentally unstable, is on the spectrum somewhere, Asperger's or something. And that's just, you're asking for trouble. You're going to have a public scandal with a guy like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the others, you notice the ones you don't hear about are actually the ones who are serious people. The ones who aren't in the spotlight, like Kash Patel coming out and talking about, you know, talking about the Epstein did kill himself and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you don't hear very much from Tulsi Gabbard or RFK Jr.
Yeah.
Because they're just quietly... apparently, we presume, doing their job, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And maybe a few of the others as well. But and Musk was a problem. Musk was a bad choice. Like,
yeah. I tell you, I get pretty annoyed. And
it's the kind of thing. What I mean is that if it wasn't Trump, if it was an some other normal, you know, political president who got elected and had the idea of bringing Musk in to do whatever, a bunch of advisors, career bureaucrats and politicians would say, nah, bad idea. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he would go, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You know better than me.
Yeah.
But Trump's not going to do that. Trump's He's going to go, no, Elon's a good guy. I like him. I'm going to bring him
in.
I'm the CEO. He fires rockets. I'm the CEO. I'm going to bring him in.
Yeah.
And then so that's all I'm saying, really. But go ahead.
Oh, well, it was just going back to the whole, like, Trump is actually running the country is like all the people who were annoying me. And I tweeted about this who were saying, well, Biden, who was really running the country during the Biden years? Because Biden was like senile.
Right.
And it's like Mike Kernovich and it's the people. And I'm just like, dude, you really think W was running the country?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jesus, how naive are these people to really think that one guy sits up there and runs the whole thing?
Right.
You know, and
people,
these people don't understand.
They can't conceive of the magnitude of the edifice that is
the deep state
or just the government.
Yeah.
Like in a country of 330, 40, 50 million people, like the size of that system basically. Yeah. And how many people are needed to run it and how much of it is actually run in perpetuity, like in the background, you know, how much of it is just part of a continuity of government, let's say, behind the scenes, you know. They think like, but
the commander in chief is running things and he makes all the decisions,
all the buttons.
And if Biden wasn't doing that, then Jesus, what was really going on? Yeah. It was like the same thing that's clearly going
Obama.
On.
It was Obama who was running the country instead of
it's like, Biden. Dude, that's the same thing that's been going on since the JFK was assassinated. Maybe a little bit of Nixon running things. But like, you think Ronald Reagan was running things in the 80s?
An actor.
I mean, Dick Cheney was running essentially the American foreign policy for 8 years, you know, when someone else was the president. And it's like, were these people really even paying attention at all before, you know, recently?
There's not a lot of thinking going on.
Yeah.
And as a general rule, Mike Benz posted this about the LA things, which I thought was interesting.
Mike Benz,
he's on the spectrum. Bring him in.
Replace Musk with
Mike Pence.
Why the fuck is national?
So he says, "Hey Trump board, why is it the National Endowment for Democracy still getting? Why is the National Endowment for Democracy still getting government funding? Do you like riots? Because this is how you get riots." And this is replying to himself. He says, "It's crazy. This riot is in L.A. while the mayor of L.A. Karen Bass was for 6 years on the board of NED, the CIA cutout." Specializes in starting riots and street protests. So, that's another angle to these protests is that it is the Dems, the California, you know, the Karen Bass, you know, lefty NED woman, you know, kind of deep state in a certain sense, you know, more surface level deep state, but deep state, who is encouraging people, facilitating.
Yeah.
Protests on the street
to
push back against. Like they can't stop ICE from going in and taking immigrants off the streets and deporting them. They can't do it themselves. They can't stop him doing it themselves. Like Karen Bass and all our Democrat California politicians can't stop him directly, but they can whip up the population or facilitate the population to burn down.
Well, that's essentially why they are in the position they were in. They were given that job because that was their job,
right?
To whip up the population and make things chaotic. And you know, that's
right.
You know, they wouldn't have been in that job unless they agreed to do that,
right? Weaponize the population.
Yeah. But I do find Mike Benz annoying because he never says a thing about AIPAC.
Right.
And I think he's a limited hangout. I just wanted to throw that out there right now.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, have you ever heard him say anything about how much money the U.S. is sending to, you know, Israel?
Nobody's
allowed
to, though. And you see a lot of these people.
Some people say it.
Yeah.
You said it just now.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, Theo Von, I mean, who was not even
right
in any side.
He asked J.D. Vance
The other day. Yeah, and J.D. Vance gave a ridiculously, basically neocon answer.
Right.
You know.
Because at that level, you're not allowed to. Yeah. Those people are not allowed to. Yeah. Politicians, etc. And then there's some other. But Mike Benz is Jewish.
I know. Yeah.
So you're asking, like, why doesn't that Jew call out the Jews?
No, I'm just saying he doesn't do it.
Of course, because he's Jew.
Like, people like who say, well, this guy's so, it's like, well, he's got a limit to his usefulness. I would say that much.
Yeah. But don't ever expect a Jew in general to.
Yeah. No, I don't expect it. I'm just like, if anybody isn't paying attention, like, look at what he's not talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that was just my little rant there about that guy. I mean, he did some good stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He as did. Far as it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so we've got, speaking of the Jews, we've got Greta.
Greta.
On the Flotilla.
Flotilla.
They're there now, aren't they?
They're there. There's a comms blackout.
Yeah.
On board Greta. They're calling it Greta's Flotilla. She's the captain.
I am the captain now.
As again, it's kind of like the president, right? Like Greta's the captain or the in charge of this flotilla, mm-hmm. in the same way Biden was in charge of America, right? But the Israelis are just going to do the same thing they did to.
Do you think that they
the are, last one in 2011
gonna,
or whatever
attack that one because
Greta's on board
on there?
Or are they, I don't know. The Israelis are
crazy.
They're crazy. They don't give a shit anymore.
No,
obviously.
Yeah.
They never really give a shit.
But now they really.
For a
don't.
While, they try to work within the confines of public appearance and mm-hmm. public perception, just to some extent. But recently, they're like, okay, it's on. You know, Gog Magog. These are the times. Mm-hmm. You know, our holy books told us that this is what was going to happen. The whole world would turn against us. We see it happening. Bring it on. Because that's how we get to fulfill. I often wonder how much those people actually believe in that. Some of them do, yeah. Or they use it. And they, so the, a lot of the population, the ordinary people, believe it. Politicians, some of the politicians probably do. That's the scary thing, is that some of the politicians in Israel, in government, who are pushing through policy mm-hmm. and running the country, actually believe the whole Israeli Jewish narrative in the Torah and the Talmud.
And try to bring... make it happen.
Yeah, like the end times and all that stuff. They actually believe that. There's ones above them who just instrumentalize that or weaponize that and use it to manipulate things and don't believe it at all. They know it's bullshit because they're actually smart. But it's scary to think that there are people who are supposedly intelligent or maybe aren't, but have power mm-hmm. and actually believe in that kind of a fantasy. You know?
And that fantasy is bringing on the destruction of Israel? Is that what they're trying to do?
Israel will be attacked.
Just the attack.
The world would turn against Israel and would be attacked.
Uh-huh.
And Israel won't be destroyed, but it will be attacked. But ultimately, Israel will emerge victorious and subjugate all the guys.
Isn't that just a flight of fancy, hey?
And it'll be the second crucifixion of Christ.
Yeah. And then the crazy Zios in America are saying...
People are crazy. I don't know.
Yes. Do it. Yeah, keep going. Because if you guys bring on the apocalypse, then we get to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, actually, and I don't know if they believe that or not, but they're not the Christian Zionists, but the evangelicals who would support Israel see Israel as a means to an end because their narrative has, Israel gets destroyed, but that's when Jesus comes back and actually... And then they get to rule the world. So who gets to rule the world afterward?
It's like a thing from like 20 years ago. Remember with like W and the fundamentalist Christians and everything all teaming up with like the crazy Israeli Jews because it helped the fundamentalists want to be raptured.
Well, and it was all to garner support for the war on terror, the quote-unquote war on terror, invading Iraq and all that kind of stuff. And all these things have to happen, you know. Basically, the Israelis and the Christian Zionists and the Israeli Jews, Zionists in Israel, all see anything bad that happens as good. Any conflict, any, you know, upheaval, this is all stuff like they've been waiting for so long for these end times to happen, and they have to be preceded by a lot of conflict. So, like, there's nothing bad that happens is actually bad. It's all good. So, you know, bring on, get those Iranians to attack us, because then that'll move it forward. Yeah. And, you know, they're like a different species, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like they're from, those kinds of people in general are like from a different planet. Like, I don't know how.
Yeah.
But I don't think they think very much at all, really, you know, is the problem. You know, they're very simple-minded people, but not idiots at the same time.
Yeah.
They're cunning and smart and all that kind of stuff, you know. That's what I mean. It's like, they're just different planet, you know. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. Israelis have said,
they're just going to go forward with the bombing Iran on their own?
Do you think? I don't know. It's very difficult for the Israelis because they know Iran has nukes.
Mm-hmm.
So they would like to just have some kind of regime change in Iran, but they know that's very difficult as well because, you know, 80 million people and stuff. So, but then any rational person would just go like, okay, look, let's just drop this thing. You know, let's find a different way. This isn't going to work. This doesn't have a good outcome. There's no way we win in this situation.
Right.
So let's just drop it. But they don't drop it because they just dig deeper and find different ways, another way to interpret or come up with new plans as to how to achieve their goal. And maybe part of it is, Israel being attacked, so they want to actually provoke Israel to attack them. Iran.
Yeah.
Provoke Iran to attack them. But they'd like to have America to back them up. And under Trump, that's a bit dubious.
Yeah, I don't think Iran's going to attack them because they probably are smart enough to realize that it's just like with how Russia gets, people try to handle Russia the same way, you know. But so Iranians are like,
there's a theater, like you said earlier on, a theater aspect to the whole thing. You know what I mean? At a certain level, it's very real on one level, but there's also a theater aspect to it as well, where everybody understands that, you know, this isn't personal. We don't go too far. After this war is over, we'll all be friends.
Right.
Friends, with the exception of Israel. I think, because Israel will never be friends really with
anyone.
At least anybody.
Nobody wants to be friends with them.
Yeah, well, they will never be friends with people with, like, there's certainly people in the Middle East ordinary people in the Middle East who never want to be friends with Israel because they're fundamentally land thieves. You stole our lands and you persecuted people, our people, let's say, so we're not going to be friends until you change course, basically. And Israel's not going to change course. Yeah, it's all business for most of them. They just see it from a business point of view, nothing personal. Like I was saying earlier on, we ordinary people tend to look at it and get invested and take it personally. And that's a fundamental mismatch with, if you project that onto these people, they're not taking it personally in the way you're taking it personally. They wipe out thousands of people, blah, blah.
It's just business.
It's funny because they far be for me to take the deaths of thousands of innocent people seriously. What was I even thinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I was thinking of, like, you know, The Sopranos and, you know, other kind of gangster shows where it's just like, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just business.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't not like you, but I'll kill you.
Yeah.
You know, so because ordinary people think, wow, to kill someone, you must have really hated him. No. Yeah. I thought he was a good guy, actually. He was just in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of psychopathic mindset in a certain sense, you know, in the sense where a psychopath doesn't really hate the target. They just want something from them, or they want to get something. And if you're in the way or you have what they want, it's just like you're an obstacle. Just move out of the way. Sorry, I had to shoot you there, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very psychopathic.
I wanted that thing.
Because people are like objects to them, right? So they're just moving the object out of the path.
Right.
You know, you're in the way and just moved you out by putting you in the ground.
Yeah. And then they can go on. And if they meet a bigger psychopath, they'll just smile and be friends and stuff and try and screw each other over. So it's these. And that's a lot of that's what's going on in politics. There are different types of psychos and sociopaths and stuff involved in Western politics. And that's how they're operating with each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was going to say Greta. I don't know. The Israelis have said that Greta will not be allowed the flotilla will not be allowed to break the embargo and support Hamas, whatever that means.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how do they stop it? Do they, like, you know, pull up their little navy and block it from going any further?
They board it and beat heads.
Yeah. We need to live stream that one.
Yeah. Did you see Mertz? Chancellor.
What's it,
the new Trump? Chancellor Mertz with Trump, yeah. A couple of days ago. Did you see that one?
A little bit.
Did you see what Trump said?
What did he say to him? I need to know.
You don't know?
I might have, I just don't remember.
Where is it?
I'm still thinking about what he said to Ramaphosa.
Here it is. It was, you know, this is what, just when I think I'm going to ditch Trump and say, you know, I'm tired of this guy, he's just boring, then he does something like this. And I'm like, we should keep him for another while. This is it. So this is 2 days ago or 3 days ago.
June 6th, tomorrow, this is D-Day anniversary, when the Americans once ended a war in Europe. And I think this is in your hand in specific, in ours.
That was not a pleasant day for you?
No, that was not a pleasant
day. Well, not a great
in
day.
The long run, this was the liberation of my country from Nazi dictatorship.
That's true. So, that's true.
And we know what we owe you.
Stop it there. Y'all Nazis didn't like that, huh? Wasn't a good day, you know?
Calling them that, yeah.
You still sore? You still sore about that old World War II thing?
Let me remind you of what happened.
Spanking.
Yeah. your leader, you know, at the time, Hitler. Yeah. Your grandfather was, or his father actually, Mertz. Yes, we should. As Trump had done his research, you say your father was in the Nazi party, right? That would have been similar to the.
Yeah.
What was it? What's his name? Ramaphosa.
The South African president. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a good day for you. I mean, what do you even say to that? Like, I mean, it's just like, I mean, and then, like, it's stuff like that keeps me entertained. And I think, yeah, Trump's there because he just blunders his way because he doesn't know anything. But it also allows me to understand the people who say Orange Man bad.
Yeah.
Who just go, oh my God, he's our president, really? I mean, you know, having that level of.
Because the president is supposed to be this somehow floating above water and
be diplomatic and all that kind of stuff.
Diplomatic and
but not only diplomatic, but also to be informed.
Well,
because it is a bit of a faux pas to say like that wasn't a good day for you.
Yeah.
To a modern German,
right.
You know, if Mertz was a Nazi, you know, was it like a current day Nazi type thing, Nazi supporter? Then you would say that to him. But unless the person is obviously a Nazi supporter, you would assume that the German was a Nazi supporter. You would assume that that German.
You mean all Germans aren't?
Doesn't ideologically identify with Hitler, you know?
Yeah.
It's like saying to the current German chancellor, like, hey, that time, you know, your previous.
You put all those people on the trains and.
Yeah. Or saying, like, that time that your former leader, Hitler's name was, yeah. Were you pissed when he got killed?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
What was that like for you?
Yeah. A modern day Nazi would go, yeah, I wish Hitler had lived on and had children and then we could have established a global Reich, you know? But the average German would be like, no, I'm not really sore about the fact that the Americans, or the Russians actually, caused the downfall of the Nazi regime and Hitler died.
But it's like super appropriate though that he made this statement, this faux pas, as you called it, to Mertz.
Why? Because his father's was in the Nazi party.
Well, his father was in the Nazi, whatever. Like, that's irrelevant. What's more relevant is the fact that
Germany is being Nazi.
Germany is being Nazi-like in supporting Nazis in Ukraine.
Right. Yeah. And they're also, to some extent, being a bit Nazi with their free speech policies and stuff like that.
With trying to shut down the AFD.
Yeah.
With so many things across the board that you can actually make a pretty good case for.
Except he would say, shutting down the AFD is to stop the Nazis coming back. Although the FDA is Nazi,
right?
Yeah,
they're just pitched that way. They're just, it's like, it's just power. They just want to hold on to power.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want populism. So the fact that he's sitting there with Trump is kind of crazy, because he stands, Merz stands, and the German politicians and the French and the British politicians, all the European politicians mostly stand against everything that Trump stands for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is basically populism. You know,
that's why I like him, because he says things that are hilarious that I would want to say to these people.
Yeah, I don't know if he does that intentionally.
I don't think he does, but it doesn't matter to me.
Right? Yeah,
no. It really doesn't,
because it does fit. Like you said, it's like, oh, they are acting in different ways by supporting Ukraine and by cracking down on free speech, and like Trump may not even like be any in any way aware about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
At least only maybe tangentially. But the fact that it, like, for like the, all intents and purposes, it feels like not only is it hilarious, but it's fitting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to tease it out. You look at Hitler and the Jews, and obviously Hitler was a nutbag and all that kind of stuff, but, and presided over the, you know, the genocide, let's say, or the killing of large numbers of innocent people in a war. But I mean, Merz and Trump and all the other European politicians, most of them, have presided over the deaths of probably 1 million. Okay, they weren't innocent people, but Ukrainian men pulled off the streets, who weren't, a lot of them who weren't soldiers, who suddenly became soldiers and then thrown to the front lines and got killed.
Yeah.
Probably about 1 million of them, either dead or wounded, or and then they presided over the mass murder of the same people, same politicians, including Trump.
Yeah, that's in just Gaza, in the last 5 years.
But in Gaza, over the past 18 months, you know, probably upwards of 250,000-300,000, mostly women and children.
Modern-day Hitlers.
Is there much difference?
Right.
I mean, in essence?
No.
I mean, you're not doing it yourself, but you're not doing anything to stop it?
Yeah.
When you have the ability to stop it?
Right.
Who is doing anything to stop it?
No one.
Can we criticize everybody then?
Yeah, but there's certain people who are, you know,
more,
well, sent the weapons, right?
Yeah.
Sent the bombs.
Yeah.
Because like you yourself, Bo, are not doing anything in this very moment to stop what's going on in Gaza.
Doesn't make you Hitler.
But that doesn't make you Hitler.
Right.
Almost, but not quite.
Close. You just need to shave your beard a bit and then a little bit of the mustache, and then you'll be fully there. But you also aren't the one who's like signing the document that sends weapons and or money to Israel or to Ukraine.
So different levels of culpability.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I still like say, well, is Putin going to stop any of these hundreds of thousands of deaths happening in Gaza anytime soon?
Mm-hmm.
No. Is Xi Jinping going to do anything about it? No. No. Uh-huh. They're obviously not arming the Israelis. So there's different levels of not just culpability, but like
realistically, yeah. Real politic here. Like, what could they actually do that would make it stop in Israel and also not totally screw themselves over?
I don't know.
Like if you can come up with a scenario where there's some kind of resolution of the Israeli conflict, of the Palestinian issue, and that doesn't leave Russia destitute or destroyed, would love to hear it, because I don't see anybody going after Israel and coming out unscathed.
Why not?
Yeah.
Because they have dirty bombs, because they're dirty.
You think that's what's going on? Because surely the world could, a lot of major countries like Russia, China, anybody else who felt, you know, Spanish would be happy to, you know, join in and stuff, would be just sanctions, right? Embargo. What do you call it? Boycott.
Yes.
You know, boycott Israel. Stop sending stuff to Israel.
Yes.
Squeeze them. Have a siege of Israel.
Yes.
They
do it with other countries all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except
bring Israel to its knees.
It's not what they do. And it's like, at least try something. I'm not saying like go in and bomb them and then let all their little dirty bombs hit Moscow and Madrid and, you know, wherever else. But like, use these levers that like the America has used against countries.
This gets to the heart of the question that people keep asking, no one knows the answer to, which is what is the leverage that the Israelis have? We right. presume that they have because no one does anything about it.
Right. We need to find out.
Find out. What is it?
What is it?
You tell me.
I wish I knew, because if I would, I would be, you know, tweeting about it or something, you know, but I don't understand. And it is a source of frustration, like at least trying something with, you know, it just, if you see children and innocent people being killed yeah. every day.
Like the Americans for years, especially Samantha Power and stuff at the UN and stuff, talking about the right to protect, and they invaded, Gaddafi was bombing his own people, so they had to bomb Libya yeah. for 7 months straight to protect the innocent people and the Uyghurs in China.
Yeah.
Shout about it all the time. And then when it actually happens, because most of that was just like yes. propaganda bullshit, when it actually happens, they don't even say anything in protest, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. They keep sending weapons. So you can't believe that they actually care about ordinary people at all.
Right.
I mean, if you have any sense, just pure common sense says these people don't care. It's all, they don't care about the average person. They don't mind that large numbers of people get killed. They're not willing to take any steps when they have an actual genocide happening right under their noses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't do anything. Sorry. And you're like, why? Well, it's kind of complicated.
The complication is I don't have a conscience.
Yeah. Or Israel has too much leverage.
That's the thing, because you're like from the Western government's perspective, like, yeah, I can see that being the reason why they don't do anything yes. is because they actually don't give two shits.
Right. But
for leaders who do seemingly seem to have something of a soul and a conscience, the question is, why don't they do something? Well, there's not very many of them, for one thing, and they're not exactly mm-hmm. very powerful when compared to those who are within the cabal of conscienceless-ness.
Mm-hmm.
The power dynamic is unbalanced, let's say, in that respect. So it's not so clear-cut that they can get away with much, because, I mean, Russia, Putin, they've said things about it,
mm-hmm.
but as far as, like, yeah, creating a blockade or something like that, or boycotting. I haven't seen anything from them along those lines. And at some point, it's like, you can't save the world.
I think we can agree that none of those, like people like Putin or Xi, are blackmailable or have any kind of, Israel doesn't have any kind of anything on them. I doubt it.
Doubtful, yeah.
So that can't be the reason why. I mean, let's just assume, I say.
It suggests some kind of a inside
right.
understanding among all these people that is really interests, not just Israelis, really government, but Israeli interests around the world. Jews, basically. This is the whole Jews run the world conspiracy, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm putting that in air quotes for YouTube.
Right.
Hopefully the YouTube algorithm knows that I put Jews run the world in air quotes.
We don't mean it.
We're just using it because other people make that claim. Including some Jews, including some high-level Jews. We had it in a couple of shows ago. But it implies some kind of a, yeah.
Some kind of
global influence.
Club.
Amongst Jews in general who have insinuated themselves into positions of power in many different countries to the point that the governments in those countries know that they can't do it, that they have to, you know, pay homage or at least not say anything bad about Israel, not take any action that would negatively impact Israel because there would be more serious repercussions for them.
Because they've made statements, various countries have made various statements to, you know, varying degrees of admonishment,
mm-hmm.
But you can't ever go too far with it.
Mm.
It's like you can say things to a point, but you can't go beyond that point. And the question is, why?
Mm-hmm.
And is it, as an example of something, like when Putin was seemingly going along with the COVID, the vaccines and the mandates and the yadas and the yadas, you can make the case for the fact that he was doing it in order to set himself up to be able to do what he's doing right now in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he didn't do that, the potential for him being destroyed economically, socially. The case can be made that he would not have been able to do what he's doing had he not gone along with it, because the populations of the world were so driven, programmed, well programmed by the Western media's fear-mongering campaign about COVID, that had he not done it, they probably would have ousted him.
Maybe. Who knows? But they didn't. I mean, Russia wasn't too bad. They didn't really lock down to any significant degree, and they didn't use the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines and stuff. So they used their own vaccine. So, and the point of it is, all governments knew from the get-go, from when COVID started, that it was a bioweapon. They knew from day one. Everybody knew it was spread around. The Chinese had done the analysis on the virus in labs and stuff, and they published them, and they knew that, because any microbiologist who looks at man-made virus and, you know, looks at the changes and the gain of function changes have been made, they know pretty quickly that can't have happened naturally. There's pretty clear evidence if something's natural, a natural mutation, or deliberately manufactured, something that was added to it or whatever. And at the time you saw that, actually, the evidence was right there in front of everybody. The first place in Europe, anyway, after it came through Iran, whatever, but the first time it got a lot of attention was in Italy, because it was coming westwards. Mm-hmm. And Italy immediately activated their bioweapon protocols. They sent the military in to take bodies out of nursing homes with hazmat suits and all that kind of stuff. If it was just a natural, a normal virus, you wouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they already had access to the Chinese reports. So it was pretty obvious it was man-made, because the only reason we'd activate your bioweapon protocol is if it was actually man-made, right? Because a natural mutation isn't something that you get that worked up about, but you do get worked up about something that's been deliberately made in a lab because you think it's an attack on your country, basically. This is the Freedom Flotilla tracker. So you can keep an eye on this.
Make sure
it's freedomflotilla.org/FCC-tracker.
Yeah, she's close.
They're getting there, so I don't know how far you get to go. In proximity to Israel before it's like...
Was that today?
Nine. That's right now.
Really?
That's flashing. That's moving.
They're
right
pretty
now.
Close.
Yep. That's where they are in real time.
Netanyahu's just letting them get a little bit closer. Come and then closer. He's going to send Greta down to Davy Jones's locker.
Yeah. He's like, wait till you see the whites of her eyes. so we'll see what happens on that respect. What about... So this past week also we had... a very provocative Ukrainian attack on Russian,
supposedly destroying all of their strategic bombers.
Ukrainians are like, we shot down all of our missiles, hit all their targets, and we shot down all of theirs.
The ghost of Ukraine did it.
The ghost of Ukraine did it. Yeah, the ghost of Kiev. That amount of bullshit was just crazy. Over the past 3 years in this war, just watching it every day, it's just PR lies, propaganda. Mm-hmm. But that's part of war, basically. The information part of war is 50% of it, you know. But so they sent these trucks that had been planned for a long time. They had them ensconced in different parts of Russia, and they released them from the top of trucks in a false ceiling. Yeah. The drones came out, and they were then flown to a few bases. It was something like 2 out of 4 claimed, but actually only 2 really suffered any damage, and there's maybe 10 different planes got hit. But the problem is that those air bases are part of the Russia strategic nuclear arsenal. So it's pretty dangerous to do that, you know.
And then that was a day or two after Pompeo came in and gave him the instructions of what to do, basically.
Right, Pompeo and Lindsey Graham were there
a
few days before. And the Russia in response has kind of upped their the past two nights, basically up their attacks on different parts of different targets within Russia. And, you know, there's claims they're going to be targeting more of the kind of high level government facilities as well. You know, like the Ukrainian SBU intelligence agency headquarters and stuff like that, trying to take out different people and stuff. You know, like there has been a significant response from the Russians, and it's not over yet. Basically, there's more to come. Basically, but I thought this was interesting. This is just from it was the same day or the day after that happened. So, like I said, they launched the drones out of trucks, and this is in Jane's Defense magazine. UK's Project Volley launcher to explore rapid launch of UAVs using fans. Huh. So, kind of.
Interesting.
Makes you wonder who actually who's actually waging the war in Ukraine, really? Like, apart from using Ukrainian bodies to throw at Russian missiles or Russian.
I'm pretty sure it was either Lavrov or some other high level one that said it's just the Western, like, basically intelligence agencies that were running that operation.
Right.
You know, they just came right out and said it. I mean, they've said it before, but specifically for that one.
So the picture there is a Mercedes Sprinter, a file photo of a Mercedes Sprinter van of the type that the UK MOD is looking to transport launch UAVs from under Project Volley Launcher. UK MOD has issued a prior information notice to industry for the development of a rapid launch capability for unmanned aerial vehicles using vans. Posted on 4th of June, the PIN is geared at new capability to be developed under Project Volley Launcher and delivered in early 2026. The system must be transportable by vehicle, a large body Mercedes Sprinter truck threshold, or regular Ford Transit van equivalent objective. Seeks to launch 5 fixed-wing UAVs within 4 minutes of each other, and to then recover them within a maximum of 10 minutes from that first launch. So, perfect example of them using Ukraine as which has been testing more or less a testing ground all along for testing new technologies and testing particularly drone warfare. They're all learning lots about drone warfare, and they're developing, updating their they're such arseholes. Anyway,
there was the take about how the attack was at least partly an attempt to derail the Istanbul peace talks to get the Russians to pull out to make them look bad, which they didn't do there because they're not idiots.
Right. And also right now, past couple of days, the Russians have like something like 6,000 bodies in refrigerated trucks.
Was it that many?
At the border of Belarus, 6,000, waiting to hand it over, hand them over, and the Ukrainians going, nah, we don't really want those.
Yeah.
It's like, and then the Russians respond by posting a list of all the names, on the internet, release the names of all the names so family members can see if their lost loved ones are on the list to then put pressure on the Ukrainian government to actually accept them back. These are like your people that you sent to war. These are your heroes, right? But you're like, nah, don't want them. Bunch of scumbags. Like,
graveyards are full, guys. Sorry, we can't we can't take any more bodies. We've got too many dead guys already.
We sent them over there so you guys would deal with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just the bombing deep within Russia was the first strike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was the train derailment, and then there was another one. And so there's been a number of these sabotage-esque type activities from Ukraine in Russia. And there's been talk about, and I don't know how true it would be, but Putin playing up the fact that they're acting like terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's questions about whether or not they're going to change the special military operation into some kind of counterterrorism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have no idea if that has any kind of legal repercussions or a change of tactics or what that would entail or imply. He does seem to be changing his phrasing of things.
Yeah, I think it does imply a change. I mean, if you change it, then if he starts talking about a counter-terrorist operation, I mean, at least I don't think he has to worry about I need to change it because of international law, but maybe for Russian doctrine or something, whatever, you know. think it's going to change how they deal with things.
It could open up certain potential avenues that weren't, mm-hmm. you know, that weren't allowed to him or the military because it was a special operation and not counterterrorism. And then this goes and, you know, changes that because, I mean, yeah, now you got to worry about drones flying out of vans.
Yeah. And how easily are those to hijack?
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, geez, you know, you get somebody that just jumps in a van and grabs it and takes it away. And then all of a sudden you can have all kinds of chaos that way.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's, you know, partly at least part of the plan. I don't know.
Well, Zelensky, at least when I saw him talking about like the operation and he was like gloating about how, you know, I was one of the only people who knew about it.
Oh, please.
Mm-hmm. It was just him and the head of the operation.
Pompeo.
Sure.
He was saying that like the drivers, the Russian drivers of these vans, they had no idea. They had absolutely no idea, which is why you saw some of them get strangled. Obviously.
Right.
Because they didn't know and they wouldn't have gone along with it. And right. maybe they found out and were going to try and do something about it and went pear-shaped.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. It's all in play, but we'll have to see if the world finally turns against Israel. Because Israel has set itself on a path where...
You're going down a path I can't follow.
Yeah.
Well, you remember, like, a few weeks ago, we were talking about how, like, there was a bit of a shift, at least within the Trump administration, for some of the actions that they were taking.
Yeah.
They're getting rid of, like, some of these people in the NSA or the NSC. I can't remember if it was the National Security Council. Mike Waltz, who was very pro-Israel. And then, you know, all the canceled meetings that for J.D. Vance and I think it was Hegseth. This was a couple of weeks ago, but still worth noting, like, Trump went to the Middle East and never went to Israel. You know, it's just, I mean, you got to think if you're Netanyahu, you wonder what the hell's going on.
Maybe. Unless you call him every day.
Yeah.
To sleep at night.
Trump's on the golf course every day. What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it's all, we'll have to wait and see. There's stuff coming out. The main thing, like I said, Israel set itself on a course where, you know, it's ethnic cleansing. It's genocide / ethnic cleansing. You're talking probably 200,000. The numbers will come out. You know, they're trying to delay it, so the numbers will only eventually come out in years to come, whatever. But it's probably something like between 200,000 and 300,000 people. Mm-hmm. Vast majority of them just civilians.
Yeah.
Most of them, 70% of them, women and children.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you come back from that? Maybe you do in this world because it's not personal, right? And everybody just wants you to say, oops, sorry, didn't mean to do that. And then everybody accepts you back into the
international community. Well, you know, they try the whole human shield nonsense.
It's really narratives are just
embedded in the apartments that we blew up. So we
have no choice. People, the dumbest person sees through that at this point, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And the ball is in the park of the rest of the basically world because it's a stain on the globe, on the world's conscience to sit there and, you know, just go, oh, Israel, you shouldn't do that. Why they kill another 20 women and children, you know? And it's like they're a blight and a stain on the conscience of the entire globe.
Well,
and for the interest, if there is anything to some kind of cosmic retribution or something, or in some way, if there is some kind of negative effects from egregious
one possibility, behavior
by governments or by human beings.
One possibility is that Mossad brought over the Chabad tunnel diggers and they're digging a tunnel to Argentina right now.
Right.
To escape
to follow,
Israel.
To after. Follow in the footsteps.
Their Hitlerian books.
There's a well-worn track,
to
down there.
Yeah.
I think we just, that part of the video probably cut out. Just somehow it got... But it's appropriate that it got cut out because you were being extremely anti-Semitic. No. Anti-Semite.
A possibility.
It's only a possibility. Okay, well then you're a possible anti-Semite.
Yeah, well, fair.
Schrodinger's anti-Semite.
Yeah, you are and you're not one at the same time. Yeah, so what else? Well, see, like I said, we'll have to see. It's I don't trust that any, like I said, we don't trust any Western governments actually care about anybody dying or being killed en masse. Women, children, doesn't matter to them. But they have this, they tout themselves as being modern democracies and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, human rights, that kind of thing. They don't like genocide, apparently, because they didn't like Hitler and he was bad. So anybody who would do something similar, that would be bad as well. Presumably, you know, you'd have to signal that to the population and they'd have to take action against it. So I don't know how they're going to get around that. They're trying their best just by saying not much about it, trying to ignore it, what Israel's doing. But eventually, if Israel continues, because at this point, however many more they kill of the 200,000 to 300,000 they've killed already, the rest are going to be, clearly are going to be ethnically cleansed from Gaza. They're going to be kicked out, which is a crime in itself. So there's no way around that.
Yeah,
they've done it already, basically, by destroying Gaza. They're not going to send those 2 million or however many are left to the West Bank.
Yeah.
So they are actually, in the coming months, they're going to, they're starving. Maybe they're just trying to starve them all to death, or they're trying to create a situation where there's so much hunger and disease or in Gaza with them, all the 2 million Palestinians hemmed into the bottom, that they're trying to force the hand of the international community to facilitate the movements. Then the international community, let's say, or Western governments, whatever, or Middle Eastern governments, feel obliged to do something so they don't feel like they're being... Israel's trying to make other countries accomplices to their genocide, basically, by saying, look, we've hemmed all these people into the southern part of the Gaza Strip, this tiny little area, and we're controlling the food, and oops, we're not able to give them enough food, so they're starving. So don't you, the international community, want to do something about this? Don't you want to help them? It'd look bad if you guys don't help them. That's pretty much what they're doing. Like,
yeah.
Psychos. Anyway, what else have you got?
Well, I mean, it seems like, to go all the way back to Musk, Trump, that Musk came off of his ketamine-induced manic phase and then deleted the stuff he was going to talk about, or the stuff about Epstein and everything, because maybe he just doesn't care. It was all for the lulls for him, you know, which, you know, we've talked about how, you know, he just doesn't take any of it seriously, maybe. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if, like, Trump holds a grudge for a while or not. On that, Musk walked back a bunch of stuff. You know, okay, I won't decommission the Dragon capsule, which is the only thing that the astronauts use to go into space anymore. You know,
right?
At least it seems like Musk is trying to, like, mend things. Whereas I don't know if Trump's that type of person or not. You know,
Trump seems to be like as flippant and like wishy-washy about things as anything. He's like, his opinions change with the wind.
Yeah.
So I can see, like, if Musk, like, you know, goes on an apology tour of some sort, it doesn't have to be like so grand and extravagant or whatever, but like, if he continues to like walk things back, I don't see it being any kind of like,
yeah, maybe we need to bring in Barron to be a mediator, you know? Like, just sit him down, fellow autist, sort of.
Have an autist to autist conversation.
I don't know for sure. I'm just kind of joking, but.
Well, if Barron is one day going to be emperor, he needs to start young.
Yeah.
So, this would be the perfect time.
Yeah. Okay. Have you any other nuggets that you want to share?
The only other thing that I thought was noteworthy was the kerfuffle between Riley Gaines and
Simone Biles.
Simone Biles
is a black gymnast, female, who was at one point against males in sport, and then she has since flip-flopped and was calling Riley Gaines like a disgusting person, essentially, for saying that guys shouldn't be in sports.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like the only reason you have a gold medal is because you didn't compete against men.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
who said that?
Well, no, like that's the reason why she doesn't have a medal is because she has gold medals is because she didn't compete against men.
Yeah. Right.
Which is so like, why are you trying to attack this woman who's saying men shouldn't be in women's sports?
Also,
or you know, vice versa,
she,
whatever.
Like attacked her looks as well, or her. Like, you look like a man, and if you've ever seen some pictures of Simone Biles,
yeah, she looks like a dude.
She's got like huge muscles, and I mean, she's kind of tiny, but still, she's just like, you know, a little too muscular. So it's like, what are you doing talking about that when like we can see that you look a little funky yourself, you know? Right.
And what provoked her to say this?
I don't know exactly the initial provocation. Riley Gaines tweets all the time about this right. issue.
She's been on that. So she's been campaigning on that. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For some reason, she picked recently to like jump into the fray, essentially.
Yeah.
Simone Biles, who
yeah.
in the last Olympics bowed out of the competition because of her mental health, which is such a, I don't know, Gen Z millennial thing to do. Mm-hmm. Like you're playing for your country in the Olympics and you can't do it because you're sad.
Right.
You should have thought about that before you took somebody else's spot. This.
You know, you train for 4 years to be in the Olympics and then you can't do it. And then you're going to go and attack Riley Gaines, who was like on the side of like sensible,
mm-hmm.
you know, normal thinking human behavior that like 95% of like humans think is correct, mm-hmm. that men shouldn't be in women's sports and that
mm-hmm.
allowing them in actually hurts women. So yeah, that's been kind of going on a little, and it's just she's been getting the ratioed on Twitter, Simone Biles, and but like I don't know that it's going to matter to her in any way. She's kind of finished anyway as an Olympian.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So yeah, that was it.
All righty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ain't got a joke for today though.
What?
No dad jokes? Hmm.
Maybe.
Maybe you found one.
Just find the good ones, you know.
Oh yeah, the real. You got to have a good one. It
takes a lot of work, you know. In. Yeah, they're all. Adam can attest that they're all top quality
zingers.
I've heard them. So,
oh yeah,
are they?
But did you hear them? And were you there? Have you been?
You have to be there.
Have you been?
I did that one already, didn't I?
Yeah. No one remembers, Joe.
No one remembers it? Everybody remembers them. They're imprinted on people's minds. The one about super glue. I super glued my thumb and my finger together.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What happened?
It'll be okay for a while.
Oh. Okay, that's enough.
That was the second one. That was a repeat.
Yeah.
Got as many laughs the second time as it did the first time.
Well, I thought the 10:30 show was the same as the 9 o'clock show.
It is.
Come on. Yeah.
All right.
We'll be back next week with an actual dad joke that has not been recycled.
Made up on the spot. Yeah, I used to hate facial hair.
Really?
But then it grew on me.
Oh, isn't that something?
Why did the scarecrow win an award?
Was that on there?
Because he was outstanding in the field.
that's an old one. I knew that one. I'm not going to do that one. That's like so old. Oldies but goodies. But baddies. All right, yeah. So we'll leave it there for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed the show, and especially our two MAGA commentators. MAGA commentators.
There'll be less freedom next week, maybe.
Well, yeah, for sure.
We hope you enjoyed the Second Amendment.
Yes.
And the First Amendment.
Giving you inside scoops on how a MAGA head actually thinks. And now you know. So now everything becomes clear. Now you know why America's in the state it's in. After listening to these two guys.
These two retards.
Yeah, so we'll be back next week with another show on whatever bullshit has been going on between now and then, of which there probably will be quite a lot, as I usually is. So until then, have a good week.
See you later.
Bye.
Can't stop the signal now.